O Lord, be merciful to me. I am pure and innocent of blame for the corruption of this city.
He snapped his head upright to stare down at the crowd and swept a hand over their heads.
Beware, miserable citizens, of what you have done by betraying your faith in God for the promises of the Pope. You have denied the true faith given to you by your fathers. You have accepted the slavery of heresy. In doing so, you have confessed all your sins to God. Woe to you when you are judged!
Women cried out, beating at their chests. Men held children up, begging for blessings. Vicious, ugly shouts against Constantine, the Pope, and all of Italy tore through the air. Cyprian made a rude gesture, then took Radu's arm and pulled him away. That fool hates the Pope more than he hates the Sultan. He would love nothing more than to see the city burn, welcoming hell with open arms as proof that he was right all along. How can they hate Constantine for doing whatever he must to protect them? Cyprian rubbed his face wearily, then looked down at his still, muddy hands. This is Constantinople. We are more concerned with the purity of our souls than the survival of our bodies. Come, there is nothing left worth seeing here. After they had washed and eaten dinner with Nazira, Cyprian excused himself to attend to his uncle. Constantine's main duties seemed to be an endless campaign of letter-writing, his weapon the pen, his ammunition, empty promises and desperate pleading. Radu wished that Cyprian had invited him to come along. Patience, Nazira reminded him, squeezing his shoulder as he cleaned the dishes. You will find ways to help. The best thing we can do now is become a part of the city. Radu turned to see her wearing clothes in the style of the women in Constantinople, a stiff and structured bodice with tight sleeves and excessive skirts. He raised his eyebrows, twirling in a circle. She smirked. Do you like it? I feel like a flower in the wrong petals. You always look lovely. Are you going somewhere?
Oh, yes. I met the wife of one of Emperor Constantine's advisers today in the market. She felt very sorry for me when I confessed I did not know how to cook with the food here. I am invited to supper with her.
But we just had supper, and it was very good. Nazira's smirk grew.
But she does not know that. And at this supper, I will meet all the other wives of important men, and they will gossip about all the mistresses of the important men, and in such a way I will soon have a larger net than you.
I did not realize it was a competition, Nazira laughed, rising up on her toes to kiss Radu on both cheeks.
It is. It is a competition to see who can find out the most the fastest, so that we can go home. She said it lightly, but Radu could hear the longing in her voice.
Nazira never spoke of Fatima, and he was too ashamed of having separated them to bring her up. But if he missed his aching, one-sided relationship with Mahmed every day, how much more must she miss the woman who loved her back? I would place all my bets on you and your gossip, then. You are a terrifying creature.
Curtsying prettily, Nazira left. Radu was restless and itchy with anticipation.
Alone for the first time since he had come to the city, he slipped out of Cyprian's home and into the evening dark streets. He drew his cloak close against the bite of the cold, drifting up from the stones beneath his feet. Terrifying thoughts nipped at his heels. Nazira already had plans in motion. All Radu had was one meeting with Constantine, in which he had merely told the truth. The fear he had been avoiding wrapped itself around him even tighter than his cloak. He had no idea what he was doing. This whole thing had been a mistake. Even if he got crucial information pulled from Cyprian or Constantine, he had no way of communicating it to Mahmed. They had no code, no ways of trading messages. Unless Radu found some brilliant form of sabotage within the city, his being here as a spy was almost pointless. He did not want to fail Mahmed, but he could not shake the worry that Mahmed had failed him. Why had he sent Radu here with so little instruction, so little preparation. Radi would have been much better used at his side. Or maybe that was simply what Radu was desperate to believe, because Mahmed's side was the only place he wanted to be. Was he really so expendable? Or had Mahmed suspected Radu's true feelings and deliberately sent him far away? Radu knew he should not feel the way he did about another man. There were many things that could be justified. But he did not know of anything that allowed for what he wanted from Mahmed. Would this love separate him both from the most important person in his life and from the God that brought him solace in his loneliness? He had meant to wander and get a better idea of the lay of the city, but he found himself back at the dark Hagia Sophia. Even now, he followed Mahmed's requests without conscious thought. No one was in the streets. Radu removed some tools from a secret pocket in his vest and carefully picked the lock. After a few patient minutes, he was rewarded with a click. He slipped inside. It took his eyes some time to adjust to the darkness. He jumped at a rustling noise, fearing discovery, but it was the clacking of pigeon wings. They, too, had come to the empty church to worship. Releasing all his exhaustion and fear with a long exhalation, he prayed. He had not been able to fully pray since arriving in Constantinople. Going through the movements was more comforting than slipping into a warm bath, and equally cleansing. He released everything he had been holding. His focus was singular, his faith a bright point in the dark building. Reluctant to leave when he was done, he climbed the stairs to the gallery, where the women would stand during services. Eventually he found a small door that led to another flight of stairs, and then to a ladder. Pushing against the trapdoor at the top, he emerged onto the roof. Constantinople unfolded beneath him. He could see the palace, a hulking structure where Constantine worked into the night. It would be enough to be here, waiting. He would get close to Constantine and trust that a way to help Mahmed would reveal itself. He would trust that Mahmed had a plan for him. He would trust that God would help him in his mission. Radu tried to draw that trust closer than the fear. Looking out over the city, he wondered at each of the lights. Who lived there? What were they thinking? Were they, too, praying for peace? For direction? For protection? And whose God was listening? He sat on the edge of the roof, his feet dangling in the void beneath him. It echoed the one that had opened up inside him. He felt close to falling, or to flying. He did not know which it would be, but had no doubt time would tell. 22. Early April. Mahmed lay with an ease so complete he seemed like a different person. Lada wondered. No, she would wonder nothing. Think about nothing. If he could exist in this space like he needed nothing more in the whole world than what he had just had, she could do the same. That lasted about 2 minutes. She squirmed, pushing him away from her. Do you always sweat this much? He laughed, pulling her close and nuzzling his face against her neck. His hand found somewhere else. Would you like me to make you sweat more? She shrieked, half from delight, half from the shock of his wandering fingers, and pushed him. Before she could realize her mistake in making so much noise, the tent's front flap opened, and two Yanicheris rushed in. Mahmed shifted so that Lada was hidden behind him. Leave, Mahmed said, his voice coldly imperious and so different from the one he had been using moments before. We heard, leave. The Yanicheris bowed. One paused. Your Grace, we have reports of a skirmish with Hunyadi, on the Serbian-Hungarian border. Reports that can wait until the morning. Do not come back in here for any reason. The Yanicheris nearly fell over as they bowed low and backed out in a rush. Lada propped herself up on an elbow and drew the blanket up over her bare chest. You do have troops there, then? Mahmed tried to pull her back down. You are letting all the cold air in. She scooted farther away. Why do you have men on the Hungarian border? There was a studied casualness to Mahmed's voice that made the hairs on the back of Lada's neck rise. As a reminder to Hunyadi that he is still needed in Hungary.
But I persuaded Hunyadi to stay out of Constantinople. I told you I had. Do you not trust me?
Of course I trust you. But I cannot risk anything. It was extra assurance is all.
It made sense, Lada supposed.
But the fact that he felt he had to double up on work she had already done bothered her.
And she worried for Hunyadi's safety. He was one of the few people in the world she considered family. Family.
Lada had not even thought to ask about Radu yet.
Where is Radu?
Did he come?
He had not come with the ambassadors, but where Mahmed was, Radu would be too.
Mahmed stopped trying to coax her back down. He flopped flat onto his back, raising an arm over his face as though tired.
No, Radu did not come.
He did not come?
She repeated, her voice flat with disappointment and shock. She needed her brother. He had a way with people like the boyars. Hunyadi had been right. She did not have the weapons for that kind of combat. Radu did. How dare he reject her again?
Did he say why?
Mahmed shook his head.
Where is he now?
What was important enough to keep him away from both Lada and Mahmed? Mahmed shrugged. He was avoiding answering her. She grabbed the arm that covered his face and pulled it down so he could not hide his expression from her.
Where is my brother, Mahmed?
He looked at the ceiling of the tent.
Constantinople.
The siege has already started.
The siege had started, and Mahmed was here, with her. She was warm with pleasure over finally outranking that stupid city.
No.
Her pleasure fled, leaving her cold. Then what is he doing in Constantinople?
Did you make him an ambassador? You know how dangerous that is.
I needed someone there. Inside.
Lada sat up, the blankets dropping. He had not answered her question about Radu being an ambassador. He had dodged it with something that sounded like an answer, but obviously was not an ambassador then.
You sent him as a spy.
I needed someone I could trust, absolutely.
I do not care what you needed. He was supposed to be here with me, or at the very least at your side during the siege, where he would no doubt be perfectly safe.
Mahmed sat up, two eyes flashing dangerously.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that wherever you are during the siege will be the safest place in the world, which is where my brother should be as well. How could you throw him into so much danger?
It was the best choice.
For him?
Or for you? For the Empire.
Oh, for the Empire. Well, that makes everything better.
Lada threw back the blankets and got out of bed. She began tugging her discarded clothes on.
Radu will be fine. He is smarter and stronger than you have ever given him credit for, Mahmed said.
Lada jabbed a finger against his bare chest.
Do not dare tell me you know my brother better than I do.
Mahmed laughed.
But I do.
Words she knew she would always regret saying halted on the tip of her tongue. If Mahmed did not know how Radu felt about him, he would not learn of it from her.
You ask too much of him.
I ask only what he is willing to do. Nothing more.
Then I do know him better, you fool. Radu would do anything for you.
Mahmed looked away, a dark flush spreading across his cheeks.
You know?
Lada's eyes narrowed to thin slits. Her fists clenched so tightly, they ached.
You know that he is in love with you.
Mahmed tilted his head to the side, as though brushing something off his shoulder.
Your brother is very important to me.
But he will never be as important to you as you are to him. Mahmed, release him. You must release him from this false hope he carries.
He shook his head.
I cannot. I care for Radu. And I need him.
But you will never love him the way he loves you.
Mahmed stood, reaching for Lada's fisted hands.
How could I? I love you.
Lada closed her eyes against the way his words struck her. Radu felt like a ghost in the room, looming in the whisper of a breeze against the back of her neck. She had what he wanted, and she did not even know what to do with it. Bring him back. He could die. Mahmed released her hands.
I have no one else better suited to the task. It is a risk, yes, but it is an acceptable risk. He knows the dangers, and he agreed. He cares as much as I do about Constantinople.
Lada let out a harsh bark of laughter.
No one cares about anything so much as you do, that accursed city.
You care about Valahia that much?
Because it is mine. What claim do you have to Constantinople that justifies risking Radu's life?
Mahmed shook his head. He sat on the edge of the bed, shoulders curved inward as he ran his fingers through his hair.
I promise Radu will come out unharmed. And then we will all be together.
You cannot promise that. And how will we be together? He will always choose your side over mine.
Not if my side is your side as well.
He smiled up at her, exhaustion pooling in the hollows beneath his eyes.
I cannot do this alone. You were right to leave before. I did not know your value, and I would have left you behind. But I know now.
His smile turned tender.
And you know now, too. I need you with me. I want you with me. Stand by my side at the walls. Help me claim my destiny. And then rule it. With me. As Empress of Rome.
Lada took a small step back, overwhelmed.
Empress.
Still naked, Mahmed stood before her, completely open and vulnerable, with his hands out, palms up.
Take the city with me. Take the crown. Take me, Lada.
A memory long since forgotten played out in front of her. Huma, Mahmed's terrifying mother, telling her the story of Theodora. The actress, the prostitute, the powerless woman who found the love of the emperor and rose to be emperor with him, saving him and the city, changing everything to her vision of how it should be, based only on her strength, and the strength of a man who loved her. Could Lada be that woman? But Mahmed had not said emperor. He had said empress. Emperor consort. She would still owe her power and her position to a man, and she was no lowly prostitute, no actress. She already had a birthright of her own.
What about Valahia?
Forget about Valahia. Why be vivode of a worthless country when you can be empress of the greatest empire in the world?
She stepped back from him.
Because if I do not lead Valahia, no one will.
Mahmed brushed a hand through the air.
We will make certain Valahia is always taken care of.
Lada shook her head slowly. The offer was tempting. But she was so close to Valahia, she could feel it nearby just as she had Mahmed. She could not turn her back on her country now.
Where are the troops? We can discuss this after. When I have Valahia secured, and you have Constantinople, then I do not know.
Maybe there will be a way for us, after we have accomplished what we need to. Hurt reshaped Mahmed's face into something younger, softer.
Is that the only reason you came?
Of course it is,
Lada snapped. His vulnerability was replaced with cold, stony features and imperious brows. He grabbed his nightshirt and pulled it over his head.
There are no troops.
What do you mean?
I need every man I have. I cannot spare them to destabilize a country I already control. I have a treaty with the Dineshed prince.
Lada sagged back.
But you could spare men to harass Hunyadi. You did not need to do that.
You could have trusted me and given me those forces instead. Were there ever any troops? Did you ever mean to help me?
I am helping you. You are destined for bigger things. With me.
He stepped toward her and she put her hands up. You did not write me. Not once, not until after I wrote Radu about having Hunyadi's trust. You saw an opportunity and you used me. I betrayed Hunyadi for you. In all her life, Lada had never felt as small and miserable as she did then. She had sold Hunyadi's kindness for nothing. All her justifications and rationalizing amounted to nothing. She was no closer to Valahia in spite of all her sacrifices. You tricked me.
I did you a favor. Even if I sent you the troops, even if you took the throne, you could never keep it. They would never follow a woman as prince. Abandon this delusion, Lada. It will destroy you. Come with me. Fight at my side. I trust only you with my life.
He pointed at the slit in the tent wall.
I could die without you.
Lada raised an eyebrow. I suppose that is an acceptable risk.
Mahmed threw his hands in the air and started pacing. I am offering you so much more. I am offering you the world. I am offering you myself.
He pointed angrily at the bed.
You were happy enough to accept it a few minutes ago.
That was different. You promised me soldiers.
Disgust squeezed his words. Was this merely a transaction for you?
Lada slammed her fist into his stomach. He doubled over and she spoke right into his ear. Do not ever talk to me that way. But his words had struck too close to home. Angry tears filled her eyes. She had not sold her body to him, and she hated him for thinking she had used it to manipulate him. But she had sold her determination to gain the throne on her own, as well as her relationship with Hunyadi, all for the false promise of a few hundred men. Mahmed caught her hand and pressed it against his cheek.
Whatever else you believe, know that what I did out of love. I love you. I have always loved you. Will you still choose Valahia?
Lada yanked her hand away and retrieved her knife from the floor. You betray my brother with your feigned ignorance of his feelings. You betrayed me, but I will never betray Valahia. She lifted the knife, pointing it at him. If you set foot on Valahian soil again, my soil, I will kill you. Ignoring Mahmed as he shouted her name, she left the tent through the same cut she had entered it. This time, it seemed much deeper. 23. Early April. In the clammy morning fog, Radu sweated. He leaned against the stone steps for a few breaths, then continued climbing. The awkward shape of the tombstone chunk he held made his fingers cramp. When he finally reached the top of the wall, he staggered to the mound of stones and added his own.
Funny, using tombstones of the dead to repair the walls.
Radu looked up into the well-worn but cheerful face of Giovanni Gestignani, the Italian man from his first and so far only meeting with Constantine. Gestignani was tall, broad-shouldered, even powerful in the way he moved. A deep line between his brows made them look set in a permanent scowl, but all his other wrinkles told of smiling and laughter. Radu wiped his forehead with the back of his arm and straightened. He was only a couple of inches taller than the older man.
Well, it is the least those citizens could contribute to the city's defense.
Gestignani laughed,
a sound like a cannon shot. He clapped a hand on Radu's shoulder. I remember you. You brought us news of the infidels' preparations.
Radu nodded. It was always jarring to hear the Ottomans referred to as the infidels, since that was what they called the Christians.
I wish I had come armed with better tidings. All information, good or bad, helps us.
Gestignani sighed and turned toward a group of men shouting at each other.
The dead contributing their tombstones may yet do more than the living who cannot stop fighting with each other.
He strode away toward the fight. Radu leaned over the edge of the wall and looked out onto the plain beneath. It had been cleared of anything that could hide the Ottoman forces. In front of them was a foss, a large, deep ditch meant to slow down attackers and make them easy to pick off. Constantinople's defences of a foss, the outer wall where Radu stood, and an inner wall had repelled all attackers for more than 1,000 years. But none of those attackers had been Mehmed.
Radu!
The voice triggered a wave of happiness even before Radu realized who had called to him. Radu turned to find Cyprian walking next to the emperor. Radu bowed deeply, trying to look surprised, as though he had not overheard Cyprian saying that he would be touring the walls with Constantine today, as though Radu had not deliberately stationed himself at one of the weakest points of the wall, knowing that the two men would end up here sooner rather than later. Cyprian had been so busy that he and Radu barely saw each other, even living in the same house. But going out of his way to run into the other man was tactical. It was not because he was lonely for conversation with anyone outside of the bedroom he shared with Nazira. She, too, was frequently gone, making social calls and leaving Radu with far too much time to think.
"Have you seen Gestignani?" Cyprian asked. "You only now missed him. There was a fight, and he went to see about it."
Constantine leaned out over the wall, itching at his beard.
"If the Italians send us nothing else but Gestignani, they have still done more to help than anyone. I cannot keep the Genoese from fighting with the Venetians, who fight with the Greeks, who suspect the Genoese, who hate the Orthodox, who hate the Catholics. Only the Turks under Orhan seem to get along with everyone."
He smiled wryly at Radu.
"Orhan is still here."
Radu was surprised that he had not fled the city in advance of the siege.
"He has nowhere else to go, and I am glad for his help, and the help of his men. He is no Gestignani, but no one is, except perhaps Hunyadi."
Radu was eager to contribute to a topic he knew something about. "I had never heard of Gestignani before, but if he is anything like Hunyadi, the Ottomans will fear and hate him."
"They fear Hunyadi that much?"
"He is a spectre that haunts them. Even their victories against him count for little when stacked against how much he has cost them. His name alone would cause problems for Mehmed." Constantine nodded thoughtfully.
"He should have been here by now. I am afraid we have lost him."
"But you have more Venetians."
Radu hoped it sounded like he was trying to be positive rather than fishing for more information.
"Only a handful. We hope more are coming. Galata, our neighbor, will send no men. They are too afraid of being caught in the conflict. They are everyone's allies, and thus, no one's. It was all we could do to make them attach the boom across the horn."
The giant chain that closed access to the Golden Horn Bay was strung from Constantinople to Galata. Sitting along the swift water leading to the horn, Galata lacked Constantinople's natural defences. If Mehmed attacked the city, it would fall. But he did not want to waste resources on Galata. If he took Constantinople, Galata would effectively be his. During the day, people walked freely between the cities, but at night both closed and locked their gates. Radu wished everyone in Constantinople would walk across the bay to Galata and stay there. He did not understand why they stayed in Constantinople. When Mehmed arrived, Radu hoped they would finally see the futility.
"There,"
Constantine said, pointing. Cyprian was taking detailed notes. Radu moved closer, following the direction of Constantine's finger.
"We need as many men as can be spared on the Lykos River section."
Though Constantinople was on a hill, there was one section of the wall that did not command high ground. The Lykos River cut straight through it, making a foss impossible to dig, and lowering that section to a dangerously accessible level. Radu knew all this from Mahmed's maps, but it was still a strange thrill to see it in person. And from this side of the wall, too, where he had not expected to be until after the siege. Constantine detailed which men and commanders should be stationed where. Radu committed it to memory, secreting it away with all the other information he heard. Everywhere they went, Constantine stood straight and confident, complimenting the men on the work in progress, giving suggestions for further improvements. He may have been jeered in the streets, but among the soldiers it was apparent that he was deeply respected, and returned the respect. "Here," he said, stopping again. They had come to a patchwork section, where the other walls were shining limestone, with a red seam of brick running through. This one had a haphazard look to it, and unlike the rest, there was only one wall, rather than two. It jutted out at a right angle, the palace where Constantine lived, rising behind it. "Why is this section so different?" Radu asked, though he knew the answer.
"We could not leave a shrine outside the walls."
Constantine's tone hinted at annoyance, but his confident smile never left.
"We are better protected by one wall and a holy shrine than by two walls without one. Or at least, that was the reasoning a few hundred years ago, when they built the wall out to encompass the shrine."
Constantine noted several weakened and crumbling points as he talked with a foreman directing repairs. Finally, the three men descended the stairs and went back into the city through a sallyport, a heavily guarded gate used to let soldiers in and out during attacks.
"Tell me, Radu, what do you think of my walls?" Constantine asked. "I think they deserve their tremendous reputation. They have stood for this long for a reason."
Constantine nodded thoughtfully.
"They will protect us yet."
They had lasted 1,000 years of unchanging siege warfare, but Mahmed was not the past. Mahmed was the future. He brought things no one else had yet imagined, and that no walls had yet seen. Constantine spoke again, his thoughts apparently on the same man as Radu's.
"I hear the Sultan is repairing roads and bridges all over my lands. It is very generous of him to perform maintenance while I am busy. Do you think he would spare some of his men to help us repair the walls while he is at it?"
Radu laughed weakly.
"I am afraid I am no longer in the position to make that request."
Constantine's face turned serious so quickly that Radu feared he had betrayed something. The Emperor's hand came down on his shoulder, but instead of a blow, it was a reassuring weight.
"I know why you fled. Everyone has heard of his depravity, his harems of both women and men. You are safe here, Radu. You never have to go back to that life."
Several moments passed while Radu worked through Constantine's words and tone. He looked at Cyprian, who was staring determinedly up at the palace. And then everything made sense. The sneering guard they had passed at the Rumeli Hazar, everyone's willingness to accept that Radu would so easily turn from Mahmed, eyes filled with scorn or with pity.
Yes, thank you. I have to... excuse me."
Radu turned and walked stiffly away. When he had rounded a corner and was out of sight, he sank against the wall, pushing a fist into his mouth in horror. Was that the rumor, then, that Mahmed had a male harem, and that Radu had been the jewel of it? Radu, the handsome? Someone else had called him that recently, before the soldier. Halil Vizier, back in Edirne. Was he the source? Was this another tactic of his to demean Mahmed, to make him seem evil? Radu did not know which filled him with more despair, that everyone had heard this rumor except him, or that the mere suggestion of Mahmed loving women and men was seen as evil. His feelings for Mahmed had never felt evil or wicked. They had been the truest of his life, bordering on holy. To hear his love so casually profaned made him sick to his stomach. And then another, A horrible thought occurred to him. Mahmed must know about these rumors. Surely he knew. Was the ruse of Radu's distance from Mahmed not simply for their enemies? The way Mahmed had jumped on the chance to send Radu away, too, with so little preparation or aid. Mahmed had been eager to take the opportunity without any information or guarantees. Radu had thought it was because Mahmed trusted him. Now he wondered. Did Mahmed know the rumors and Radu's true feelings? And had he sent Radu here to end both of them? Radu collapsed into bed next to Nazira. He had spent a long day helping repair the walls. The irony of being sent behind the walls to undermine them while physically repairing them was not lost on Radu's aching muscles. Sighing heavily, he put an arm over his face. "You first." Nazira shoved him onto his stomach, then began kneading the muscles in his back. Radu sank deeper into the uneven mattress, not caring about the feather spines that jabbed into him. Simple human contact with someone who cared about him did more healing than Nazira's small hands ever could. He realized how little anyone had actually touched him over the last few years. Lada had never been physically affectionate, unless he counted her fists. Nazar had frequently accidentally touched him, but Radu tried his best not to think about his dead friend. He could remember every moment of physical contact with Mahmed, but each was too short, too formal, never enough. And then there had been the horrible kiss with Halil's son, Salih. A kiss that still filled Radu with self-loathing for how much he had liked being wanted, even when he did not return the feeling. So this friendly intimacy with Nazira had its benefits. Of course, the downside to being married was that they were given the same room and same beds to share. Sometimes Radu woke up from dreams, aching, desperate dreams in which his mind somehow knew the sensations his actual body had yet to experience. In a state he really did not want Nazira to witness. Frequently, in spite of his exhaustion, he could not fall asleep for fear of what he might dream about while lying next to her. Nazira worked on a tender knot, and Radu grimaced.
"Let me think of what I heard today," she said. "Mahmed is the Antichrist?"
"Yes, I heard that one too."
"Did you hear about the child who dreamed that the angel guarding the city walls abandoned his post?"
"No, that is a new one. I heard about a fisherman who drew up oysters that dripped blood."
"Good thing I never cared for oysters. And fish. So much fish in this city. If I never eat fish again when we leave, I will be happy. What else? Oh, Helen, one of my new friends, is very bitter. Apparently the first emperor of the city was Constantine, son of Helen. And now this emperor is Constantine, son of Helen, which means the circle of history is closing and the city is doomed. It also means the name Helen is deeply unpopular, and she is taking it quite personally."
"Why are you friends with her?"
"She is currently entertaining one of the Venetian ship captains, a man named Coco. She talks about him constantly."
"Well done," Radu said, wincing as Nazira hit another particularly sore area of his shoulders. "Word from the walls is that with the relic of the true cross in the city, it cannot be taken by the Antichrist. On the other hand, they do not like the patterns of birds flying in the skies. However, Mary herself is protecting the city. Unfortunately, someone's uncle finally decoded the secret messages scrawled on a 1,000-year-old pillar that declares this the last year of Earth. But the moon will be waxing soon, and the city cannot be taken on a waxing moon, so there you have it. The city is both utterly doomed and cannot possibly fall."
"These people are insane," Nazira said sadly.
"At least it saves us the trouble of trying to foment chaos within the walls. They need no help with that."
"How are you doing with getting close to Constantine?"
Radu shrugged, rolling back over. Nazira lay on her side, propped up on an elbow. He had not told her the real reason why Constantine accepted his loyalty without question, He was too humiliated to speak it aloud. I see him only in passing. He is everywhere in the city, constantly on the move to inspire people.
I have seen him a few times. Helen hates him. I think he looks nice. What about the other important men?
Right now they are trying to organize, and waiting for further aid before they decide where to commit. I do not see much of them. I never knew waiting could be such a wearying task.
What about Cyprian?
Radu shifted uncomfortably. He is close to Constantine. He takes notes for him. I am sure he knows most of the organization of the city, but...
But what?
Closing his eyes, Radu rubbed his face. There was a bigger issue where Cyprian was concerned. A nebulous one, the contours of which Radu had not yet traced out. He did not know if he wanted to or even could. We are living with Cyprian. We eat meals with him. Sleep next to his room.
And they liked him.
Nazira had not said it, but Radu could see in the smiles she gave Cyprian, the easy way she laughed at his stories over meals. Radu was not the only one with complicated feelings toward their enemy. But he rationalized them anyway. It would be dangerous to abuse any information we get through him. Too immediately suspicious.
True.
Nazira drew the blanket up to her chin and snuggled into Radu's side.
We carry on, then.
Radu patted her arm, waiting for her breath to go steady and deep. Then he rolled away, sitting on the edge of the bed with his head in his hands. The only thing coming here had accomplished was getting Radu far away from Mahmed and the rumors spread about them. Radu knew, if that was what Mahmed needed, he should be glad. He should be willing to sacrifice himself to protect Mahmed's vision, to protect his reputation. But he could not, would not, be willing to sacrifice Nazira. He would stay the course. He would make something of their time here. And he would get her out alive. No matter what. 24. Early April. Wana, the only one who knew about Lada's meeting with Mahmed, said nothing as Lada commanded her men to pack up camp the next morning. Lada was grateful to her for that. She could not have handled questions about the soldiers she should have returned with. Bogdan stayed closer to her side than ever. He never asked where she had gone. At least his unquestioning acceptance of her actions had not changed. But even if he asked, she would never tell him. Or anyone. Lada's mind chased itself in angry circles. Mahmed, whom she had always trusted, had deceived her, and he thought she would choose Constantinople after that. How little he knew her. The next night, though, lying on the frozen ground, her mind betrayed her. Images of being empress next to Mahmed haunted her when she closed her eyes. It was the worst part of everything, knowing that, on some level, she wanted that much power, even at that cost. She awoke, gasping and aching. No. The worst were dreams of Mahmed at her side, in an entirely different fashion. She made her men move before dawn. Sleep was not her ally. She drove them hard toward Hunidwara, reassuring herself that at least she had done some good for Hunyadi. Constantinople would fall. Of that she had no doubts, whatever else she might now doubt and hate about Mahmed. And Hunyadi would have died there. Her duplicity had spared him his life. She could take comfort in that.
I hate Hungary,
Petru grumbled, riding abreast of Lada, Nikolai, and Bogdan. And that lord or noble or prince, Matthias, whenever he is around me, he holds a handkerchief to his nose. Petru ducked his head to smell under his arms.
I smell nothing.
Nikolai leaned close and feigned fainting.
That is because your sense of smell has killed itself out of despair.
Matthias is not a prince, Lada said. He is Hunyadi's son. Petru's expression shifted in surprise.
How did Hunyadi's seed produce that weak politician?
Nikolai's cheerful voice answered.
the same way Vlad Dracul's traitorous seed produced our valiant Larda.
Larda stared straight ahead, numb. In that moment she realized she was exactly like her father. Hunyadi had cautioned her not to discount the man who made her the way she was. Apparently her father had done his job well. She, too, had taken someone who trusted her and leveraged that trust for Ottoman aid. Aid that benefited her nothing. And she had been stupid enough to make it personal with Mahmed. She was a fool.
Larda, Bogdan asked,
his low, grumbling voice soft with concern. She pushed her horse forward, outpacing them all so they could not see the first tears she had cried since she was a child. Wana caught her, though.
Larda wiped furiously at her face.
What do you want?
Where are we going?
Back to Hunyadi. He is my only ally. Wana made a humming noise.
Not your only ally. You have other family besides your father.
Machir is dead, too. And none of the Boyars are more closely related to the Dracul line than to the Dinesht or Bazarab.
Not that side. Your mother. Last I heard, she was alive in Moldavia. And she is still royalty there.
Larda turned her head to the side and spat. She is nothing to me.
Be that as it may, you might not be nothing to her. Blood calls to blood. You could yet find your path to the throne through the support of her family. If nothing else, it is a place to rest and regroup. You need some rest.
Groaning, Larda rubbed her forehead.
I do not want to see her.
There was a reason appealing to her Moldavian relatives had never crossed her mind. Her mother had ceased existing for her years ago. The idea of welcoming that woman back into her life, even if it got her the throne. Wana leaned closer.
It cannot cost you more than whatever happened with the Sultan.
God's wounds, woman.
Very well.
Larda ignored Wana's pleased smile as she turned her horse around.
New plan, she said when she rejoined her men.
New plan? Petru asked. Where are we off to now?
Nikolai asked.
Moldavia.
Moldavia, Petru said.
Is there an echo here?
Larda glared at Petru.
Though he ducked his head and blushed, excitement animated his voice. Are we burning Moldavian cities, like we did in Transylvania?
Larda had not forgotten Matei and the waste of his death, traitor or not. She would not lose men to petty vengeance again, only to vengeance worth taking. She shook her head.
What then?
Nikolai asked.
We go to appeal to my blood. We go to see my...
She paused, feeling the edges of the next word sticking in her throat, threatening to choke her.
My mother. She is so beautiful,
Petru whispered, peering through the hedge they hid behind.
You look nothing like her.
Nikolai cringed.
And that, Petru, is why your line will die with you.
Larda did not, could not, answer as her mother rode elegantly toward them down the dirt path of her country manor. The only clear memory Larda had of the woman was one of lank hair hanging over her face, sharp shoulder blades bowed back, crawling, weeping. She had expected to come here and find the same broken creature. She had not been able to picture her mother standing, much less riding. This woman was small and fine-boned like a bird. Her hair pinned elaborately beneath her hat, shone black with hints of silver threaded through. Her back was straight, her chin lifted, a veil of lace over her face. Larda had been apprehensive about trying to leverage her connection to her mother to get help from the Moldavian king, her grandfather. But it had been easier to think of her mother that way, as a stepping stone, someone to climb over. Here, her mother was not on the ground. She was higher than Larda.
We should leave, she said. This was a bad idea.
We should at least talk to her, Nikolai said.
I do not even know if that is her. I have not seen her since I was 3.
Perhaps you were misdirected. My mother might be dead.
Bogdan pushed Petru aside, taking over his vantage point.
That is her.
How do you know?
He shrugged. I was older than you when she left.
By a year?
He blinked at Larda, expression intractable.
I remember everything about our childhood.
He said the word our with uncharacteristic tenderness. It made Larda feel unsettled, even more than she already was. Larda crossed her arms over her chest.
Well, what are we supposed to do? Jump out of the hedge and scream, "Hello, mother!"
Nikolai shook his head.
Of course not. She's not our mother. Only yours.
She is barely even that. She will not recognize me.
Larda would have to prove her identity to the woman who had fled when she was a child. She had no way of doing that.
We could bring my mother, Bogdan said. She was your mother's companion for many years.
They had left Wana at camp with the rest of the men, hidden along the mountain pass where they had crept into Moldavia. The whole journey Larda had longed to turn around, to flee, to go back home. But she could not. She needed help. She hated needing.
Fine.
Larda stood and pushed through the hedge. She struggled out from it right as her mother's horse passed.
God's wounds!
Vasilisa shouted, using Larda's father's favorite curse.
Where did you...
She stopped her fingers going to her mouth, pressing at the veil. You should travel with guards. Larda wore her anger as armor against this woman. We could have been anyone. Vasilisa moved her trembling hand to her heart.
We are not going to rob you, Larda sighed. We are here to speak with you.
Ladislav,
Vasilisa whispered.
My little girl.
Larda had been prepared to be humiliated by introducing herself. She had not thought about what she would do if her mother knew her. She stepped back as though struck, her vision narrowing to a tunnel. Every muscle tensed, waiting for attack. Vasilisa leaned down as far as she could from her horse. Her voice was barely discernible over the rush of blood in Larda's ears.
Ladislav.
She reached one tiny, gloved hand toward Larda's hair. Then she cleared her throat, looking Larda up and down in a way that made her feel naked.
Come, we will get you a bath and some new clothes.
Her mother turned the horse back toward the manor and set off at a brisk pace.
I have men with me,
Larda shouted, finally regaining her voice.
No,
Vasilisa said, not turning around.
Only you. No men.
At a loss, Larda gestured to Petru, Nikolai, and Bogdan, who watched her from the cover of the hedge.
Just stay for now. I will come back for you.
Are you certain you will come to no harm?
Bogdan asked, narrowed eyes tracking Vasilisa's hasty exit. Larda was certain of the opposite, but she did not expect the type of harm Bogdan feared.
Wait here.
When she got to the manor, the front door was closed. Barren ivy climbed over every surface, its tangled brown masses swallowing the angles and shape of the house. In the summer, it would be green and lovely, but not now. The least her mother could have done was wait for her. Larda laughed bitterly. No, her mother was skilled at doing far less than the least she could do for her daughter. Of course she would make Larda knock. Larda pounded her gloved fist against the door. It opened with such speed, the maid behind it must have been waiting there. The girl curtsied awkwardly. She wore a shapeless brown dress and an ill-fitting black cap.
Welcome, mistress. My lady has prepared a room for you.
Larda frowned. Who else was her mother expecting? I only met her just now on the road. The girl cleared her throat, keeping her eyes on the floor.
My lady has prepared a room for you. Please come with me.
Where is my mother? Where is Vasilisa?
If you will come with me, I will show you your room and draw a bath for you. Her ladyship receives visitors after supper.
But she already knows I'm here, and I have my men waiting outside. The maid finally looked up.
her eyes pointed in slightly different directions, one drifting to the left. She whispered,
"Please, mistress, do not speak of the men to her. We do as she wishes. It is for the best. Allow me to take you to your room, and she will see you after supper."
Exasperated, Larda flung a hand out. "Fine! Take me to my room!" The girl flashed a quick, grateful smile and led Larda into the house. The deeper they got, the more Larda's stomach clenched in fear. There was something very wrong here.
25. Early April. Christ stared mournfully down at Radu. No matter how Radu shifted or where he looked, the round eyes of Jesus followed him.
"Are you well?" Cyprian whispered out of the side of his mouth, leaning close.
Radu stopped fidgeting under the giant mosaic. "Yes. Just tired." In front of them, standing behind a giant wood postern, a priest ran through liturgy after liturgy. Radu's Greek was good, but he could barely understand the antiquated phrasings and words. Even if he could, he would not care. Being in this church made him feel like a child again. Radu had not enjoyed his childhood, and it was deeply uncomfortable to be reminded of it. Everything was larger than life in the church. Though it was not as big or beautiful as the Hagia Sophia, guilt covered all possible surfaces. The priest wore elaborate robes, stitched and embroidered with pounds of history and tradition. A censer filled the room with scented smoke that made Radu's eyes water and his head spin. On the raised dais next to the priest, Constantine sat on a throne. Radu envied him a seat. All the other men stood, packed in too tightly, still and listening. Radu yearned for the movement of true prayer, for the simplicity and beauty and companionship of it. The liturgy continued, as cold and uncaring as the murals of various saints meeting violent ends that decorated the walls. Larda would like those, at least. Radu smiled, remembering when they had visited a monastery on the island of Snagov in Valachia. Larda had been chastised for laughing at the gruesome death scene of Saint Bartholomew. An elaborate painting of him, with half his skin already off, adorned one of the monastery walls. Radu could never look at that mural without shivering in fear. Larda had told him to think instead of how cold poor Saint Bartholomew must have been without any skin on. He wished Larda were with him now. But even if she were, she would be up in the gallery with Nazira and all the other women, and she would be blisteringly angry about it. Radu avoided Jesus's gaze yet again and found himself staring at an equally mournful mosaic of Mary. Her head was tilted down, and to one side a miniature Christ child, solemn and staring on her lap.
"Will you protect your city?"
Radu silently asked her. He knew there was one God, but in this city of mysticism steeped in so much religious fervor, he could not escape the fear that the other God, the God of his childhood, lurked in the mist and the rain and the tremors of the earth. Radu was trapped behind these walls, separated from who he had become. With his tongue he cursed Muslim infidels, and with his heart he prayed for constant forgiveness. Surely the true God, the God of his heart, knew what Radu was doing here, even if Radu himself did not. When the liturgy finally ended, Radu wanted nothing more than to go back to Cyprian's house and sleep for a day. But Cyprian grabbed his arm and pulled him toward a group that was milling about near Constantine.
"I wanted to introduce you to... Ah, here they are!"
Cyprian clasped hands warmly with two boys who shared the round-eyed, mournful faces of the mosaics around them. Radu half expected them to tilt their heads and lift their hands in various saint-like poses. Instead, they smiled shyly.
"This is John and his brother Manuel. My cousins. Their father was John, the emperor before Constantine."
The older boy looked to be around 8, the younger 5. They wore purple robes and gold circlets. The clasps of the chains securing their robes glittered like jewels, but as Radu looked closer,
he saw they were made of glass. Radu bowed.
I am Radu.
The younger boy